Forager Health Podcast, clearing the path to true vitality. I invite you to rise with us. Let us sow the seeds of compassion in our relationships, with ourselves, with each other, and with the land. Let us take our creation, our lived experience, beyond where it's been before. Let us ask ourselves what would happen if we were to open our hearts even more. And may we be guided toward our overall highest outcomes by joining together on this day. Hello and welcome to another episode of Forager Health Podcast. This week is really something special. I decided, given the state of the world, the state of the energy that I've been feeling right now, that I have correlated and coalesced with others as confirming that, you know, I'm not the only one, where things are pretty wishy-washy lately. You know, every time you feel as though your feet are back on the ground, your life and your brain and your soul and your mind just ask for more lately. It's, you are either pushing towards your truth or you are very uncomfortable right now, is the general gist of what I have personally been going through the last long while. As you might be able to tell by the themes of the show, it's just either evolve or get antsy, you know, get those etheric pins and needles and tingles up your spine of like, I should be providing more for myself and for everyone else. I thought that it was a great time to be a little bit more reflective and to slow down a little and to discuss one of my favorite topics that's very timely and in alignment for me right now, because I just went through the threshold event of my 32nd birthday. And for a lot of people, 32 is kind of like those in-betweeners. It's a little weird. It's a little kind of like nonchalant, and it just comes and goes, and there's nothing to it. Well, for me, I've been thinking about being 32 years old since I was a little kid. And the reason why is because that is the age that Bruce Lee was when he passed away. So this week, we are revisiting Bruce Lee's philosophy, and this is going to be a two-parter where we dive into it next episode as well. We go even deeper. Today, we're going to start with my background of knowing him and a lot about his cultural influence, and you know what? I'm just going to dive right in because it's going to get really flowy really fast, and I feel like there's a tremendous amount of value here, so if you are interested in Taoism or the philosophy of Eastern peoples at all, or the difference in lifestyle when it comes to living as a martial artist, or if you, like me, were just a TV kid growing up and you're kind of like obsessed with the older style of movies and influential pop culture, if, like me, you're the only person who was paying more attention during the part of your high school history class that went through the 60s than any other time of year, then you might find something of value here. And even if you aren't into any of those things, I think that the stories and the concepts and just the mythos and grandiose kind of essence of a man who has transcended cultures, transcended racial barriers, transcended the biases and the conflicts within Hollywood theater, which is still hard to do today, who has really transcended generations now in the boldness and strength of his influence. I think there's something for everybody here. So, since I was a child, I've been idolizing Bruce Lee. You know, I considered him a mentor before I even really knew what a mentor was, before it was popular to say that you can be mentored by somebody remotely alive or dead who is here or not, through books, through stories, through, in this case, documentaries and writings and journal entries. I have just really loved him from as early as I can remember through my father sitting on the couch and noting that there's a Bruce Lee movie on the TV as he's flipping through the channels and be like, oh man, like Bruce, just because he loved Bruce, even though he knows very little about him to this day. That just like, we're going to get into like the power of his influence in a second. That meant that I loved Bruce that early on. I was probably, I don't know, 5 years old, six, seven, whatever it was, where I knew Bruce Lee's name before I was able to recognize his face, which is saying a lot because he's really recognizable. As time went on and it came time for my hand to be on the remote, right? I would watch his four movies over and over and over again, catching pieces of them on cable, no matter where it was in the plot line or what else was on at that time. Like, before I was old enough to put a finger on what was so different about him, I knew there was something extra special, like something about the man that I only knew by name and by image that I really just couldn't figure out, but I knew it was there. And I think part of that is because I knew others idolized him as well. So to my parents' generation, at the mention of this man's name, like all eyes and ears kind of like perk up within earshot and transfix on the direction of where the sound was uttered from. You know, I'm talking about with strangers in totally public situations. If you are a Bruce Lee fan, you've experienced this. If you're not a fan, you've at least experienced yourself getting caught as somebody maybe walks by with an image of him on their t-shirt. Everyone stares and there's like an understanding, a cultural, like completely boundaryless understanding of like, oh, like I don't know this person, but I have a little bit more respect for them just because they're wearing that shirt. I swear this is how it goes. If you've never been privy to this before, like wearing his image or his insignia to this day leads to stares. And his energy is so magnetic that at a mere glance of either his image or his signature martial art logo, which is this yin-yang symbol with rotating arrows and Chinese lettering surrounding it, that translates to having no way as way and having no limitation as limitation, which is the symbol for the technique that he developed, a mixed martial art technique called Jeet Kune Do. This literally, when people know nothing about it, everybody walking by stands up a little straighter. You know, they bare their chests a little more proudly as they stroll on. There's just very few characters throughout history who provoke this amount of emotional response from people. And I was even more fascinated as a kid seeing this happen in real time and wondering, like, there's just something more that I don't know other than the magnetic pull of this man on screen. So back then, all I knew was a feeling, the visage, and the many myths and legends that you would hear as a boy growing up in the 90s when, you know, knowledge of old movies was actually really still cool back then, and our media cycle hadn't ruined people's attention spans of, like, now we're going from anywhere like Mach 10 to full plaid, right? Where if it didn't come out like last year, it doesn't matter anymore. Well, I'm from that golden age still where I grew up watching movies from like the 60s and onward, from like when there was color and up. And everybody that I knew that was my age, like kids, kind of what to some extent had the same sort of thing. Like people were into different genres, but like nowadays, I feel like it would be weird for a kid to like know an action movie from the 80s. Whereas when I was growing up, if you didn't know the action movies from the 80s, it was strange. Right? You were kind of out of the loop, at least where I lived in my environment in the New Jersey suburbs. And these myths that you would hear, I remember once from like my cafeteria server at my high school, upon learning that I was into Bruce Lee, or at some point, like, there was like a mention of him while he was like putting food on my tray, and he's like, you know what, you know that he could do this, or they had to do that, like everything to that, to like relatives and like friends' dads, like everybody kind of had their own opinion of what it was like to walk out of the theater after having experienced that, because there's a degree of realism to his films that didn't exist back then before him. He kind of set the trend to like no more flying on like strings in like a suspension diaper and like pretending that you can, like, just because you know kung fu, do like 17 flips in the air and then kind of come at each other with swords, and just like that kind of fanatical, almost like a musical without the music, was like kung fu movies as they were before then, where everything was highly dramatized and coming right out of China and Hong Kong as the type of films that they liked, but lacking the degree of realism for them to become mainstream in America. And so Bruce really brought some of like the original action movies where fighting was a main tenet. You know, we had action movies where shooting was big. We had action movies where car chases were huge, and then punching was like street brawls, not really like anybody had any kind of technique or skill in fighting. It's just that they had luck in fighting, or in Arnold's case, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, he was just massive and he could just stone roll everybody. But anyways, yeah, a lot of reminiscing here, so this is going to kind of go woo-woo in some places, and I'll try to reel it back as often as I can. But yeah, some of the myths that I would hear growing up, they range from everything completely ridiculous to things that are actually kind of rooted in a little bit of truth. You know, that the pressure per square inch of his punch was equivalent of getting hit by a car going 40 miles an hour is a one that I've heard from multiple sources. That he ate raw eggs and raw beef long before it was cool, because that's only been cool for like a few years, right? That he invented mixed martial arts. He's one of the grandfathers, sure, but some people will argue that it was happening in multiple places at once in relatively the same time period. But yeah, definitely credit due. A lot of credit due. You know, he had another one, is that he had to fight a battle to the death to gain rights to teach people of other ethnicities kung fu in the United States, because his origins were in kung fu. And he would only, with his time in the States, develop his own style that was free of the classical mess of other styles. Another one is that he died from drug overdose, which I used to get really mad when somebody would say that to me in conversations about him, because it's just, it's not true. It was an accidental death due to an over-the-counter painkiller, which is really, really crazy. But if you look up the stats on how many people die from just non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or NSAIDs every year, it's a lot. And the circumstances are mysterious, but it wasn't because of like street drugs, you know, that he was still making movies after he died, because there's tons and tons and tons of movies from after Bruce's death that had his name on it with just like one letter misplaced, or like other people being called Bruce Lee, that in China, the movie wouldn't have been Bruce Lee in this. It was really just for sales, and there was a bunch of copycats that really defaced his name to capitalize on his superstardom after he passed away, because there was just this giant void that needed to be filled, this vortex, and they filled it with all the wrong things to start off. You know, it gets into really woo-woo shit. Like, people say Elvis was abducted by aliens or that he's partying with Bigfoot. I'm sure the same thing has been said about Bruce. Use your imagination, and I've heard it or somebody else has said it. But I will say that most of those myths, sparing some minor details that nowadays fall prey to a 50-year game of telephone, a worldwide game of telephone, were rooted in some sort of truth. He really was a miraculous individual. Long before there was just big box gyms where you can go out and like there's 100 different machines targeting specific muscle groups or whatever, he had friends who were metal workers and fabricators, and he would draw out these blueprints of machines that he would want made, and he would design his own workout equipment and have them made for him in a lot of what he also had, like different art pieces and like the medallion he wore around his neck made custom for him. So he was a very creative person. And when he didn't have the skill to do something himself, he was like, okay, please make this for me. And so he was toying with experimental fitness and nutrition decades. I mean, really revolutionary stuff decades before anybody else would even touch it. And he really did, like, he worked out a few hours a day in his later years. After that fight, which actually did happen, where there was a committee of Gung Fu school masters where he needed to gain permission to keep teaching white and black students out on the West Coast in the earlier days of his school, he really did have a contender appointed against him, and he had to fight. It was not to the death. It was to submission, and it didn't last very long. But in that fight, according to Linda Lee Caldwell and Shannon Lee, his daughter, he won, but he was very upset afterwards about how he had won and how tired and how exhausting it was to win a real fight in that context against a skilled component. And that's why he would then later on literally work out for hours and hours and hours every week. Hours of cardio, thousands of bodyweight reps, weightlifting mixed in while practicing mixed martial arts, and just punching and kicking takes a lot of energy. So he looked like he was cut out of stone in his later movies because he was. And that would contribute to other supernatural feats of strength. Like, he really did regularly consume blended shakes of water, raw eggs, and raw steak in order to get in that nutrition as efficiently as possible. He really could bang out reps of two-finger, one-arm push-ups and push-ups with both arms with just his thumbs. There's video and pictures of him doing it. And he really could punch people across the room with a 1 or 3 inch distance. You know, it might have been an exhibition format where he was demonstrating his skill and strength and speed, but it did happen. Whether or not that was equivalent to 40 mile per hour car, well, a full puncher kick by any martial artist really might be that level of pounds per square inch, but that is more like an exaggeration, right? And he's also, as I said, unmistakably one of the godfathers of MMA. Another really good one that people say about him all the time is that he was so fast they needed to record him in slow motion to catch his punches on film, or that he needed to be asked to slow down to be visible. That is kind of a exaggeration, although I will say he really did need to control his movements for the camera. And cameramen on Green Hornet, which was a US TV show before his movies would be made, where he was Kato, the Green Hornet's sidekick, he did force the cameramen to switch to a higher frame rate recording in order to be more easily caught on film when he moved, when he fought people. And you do notice that he goes at different speeds. Like, if you watch a Jet Li movie or you watch a Jackie Chan movie, their movement is incredible. It's almost all discernible, though. When Bruce moved at full speed, there are moments that your brain literally freaks out. Even in staged fight scenes where several hits in a blistering split second kind of leave you spinning on the couch and you ask what the hell just happened. And as you watch his films, it's in a way that I've never seen from anyone else, where if you even try to blink or think about blinking, you'll freaking miss it. So I fully believe that his speed was real, and it leaves me laughing out loud watching some of the scenes to this day as I watch his films and rewatch them. Just the shock of what happens when he goes from 90% to 100. And then, of course, he really did die under mysterious and unfathomable and unbelievable circumstances, because he's just this spitting image of one of the healthiest people on earth. And a couple of months before he would actually become world famous to the capacity that he is today, he suffered a cerebral edema and fell into a coma. And it was by the autopsy as a result of an over-the-counter painkiller that he took because he was having a migraine. And he went to lay down in some friend's bed. They were about to go out to dinner to talk about the film that was coming out, and he never woke back up. And so he died in July, and the worldwide premiere of Enter the Dragon, I believe, was in September. And so he never actually got to see his full impact. Obviously, there's going to be rumors and speculation thrown about in that type of situation because it was really hard to believe for a lot of people that, you know, a hero was dead before his film that would catapult him into superstardom would ever come out. He was already extremely famous overseas, but not as well known in the States. Enter the Dragon was his fourth and final film that he actually got to finish, and the other three of his movies would come out in the U.S. after that. So moving on, later on I would kind of discover the source behind his charisma and more be able to recognize his palpable intention, his unbreakable confidence, his unwavering and overwhelming presence on screen. Like, he could fight people without moving. You really, if you haven't and you're listening to this and you're interested, I highly recommend just going and paying attention to his facial expressions and just taking that in and recognizing the amount of energy he throws at you just by the way he holds himself. It's just unbelievable. So I'd start to get glimpses of it over time of how that was possible and what it actually was, like what the magic was behind the man. And I was probably in like the middle of high school before I got my first glimpse of it. And by then I was hooked on like action movies and stuff, and that included like martial arts movies. But I had also seen like a lot of documentaries on his life, or at least the same few over and over again. I had seen his movies countless times. I was hungry for more. So one day I would pick up The Tao of Gung Fu. So that's one of many books that if you go to Barnes & Noble, there's a lot authored by Bruce. He only actually authored one of them. The rest of them are, or at least one that I know of. There might be more that he wrote that are kind of mixed into the mess. But a lot of them are compilations of his extremely extensive written works that were unpublished at the time of his death that were put together by people who were close to him in other types of formats. So the book that he wrote in life was The Tao of Jeet Kune Do, which is the methodology of fighting that he developed, striving for simplicity and directness, right? And in the beginning of both of these books, which are in their essence instructional martial arts textbooks, there are really rich dives into Buddhist and Taoist philosophy. And they were my first glimpse as kind of like a partially developed human, you know, now in my teens, into any such spiritual aspects of life or personal development beyond what I would learn from nature, or what I would learn from ecologists and people of that sort. I know that at that time I really enjoyed reading the works of John Muir and Henry David Thoreau. But the points of that was more to get in touch with nature, whereas this was inextricably writings in order to get in touch with yourself. And I turned out spending much more time reviewing those first few pages than I would ever spend reading the rest of the book, because it's hard to learn mixed martial arts, or not mixed, but martial arts from a book, right? It's that wasn't really the reason why I bought it. I bought it because I wanted to connect more with the guy and kind of like learn more about who he was. It was very interesting. Unlike the Jewish teachings of my youth that were focused on how people survived millennia ago and how we should honor whichever of their traditions were written down, or the Christian theosophy of my friends with equally esoteric sets of rules set forth in darker times to appease some unseen, unforgiving force that seemed to oppose human nature, right? These teachings, though just as old, were about how to live fulfilled, how to treat yourself with dignity, how to care for your personal path and solve problems with appropriate degrees of action, and how we should think to act for the right reasons. You know, they were really about alignment with human nature, following your inner truth, how we should best express ourselves in the world while kind of still honoring the supreme flow of untouchable consciousness that animates us and balances the world. And it was really a glimpse into my future. And it was a glimpse into the answer behind what was going on in Bruce's films. You know, I did not know at the time how intertwined with my life's path these and other teachings like it would become, but I discovered that he was using movies as an outlet to show others what one man of passion and sound principle was capable of. So he was actively trying to impact change and break through racial, economic, you name it, barriers through showcasing his authenticity on film, while every other actor in history that I know of had hit the big screen trying to pretend to be other people, Bruce was like agonizingly trying to be no more or less than himself when the camera rolled. And to this day, I'd argue that he is unique in that respect. A lot of people have been influenced by him, obviously, that are in arts, that are in cinema. But I really do feel at its core that that's one more way that there is only one Bruce Lee and there will never be another. He was really just showing who he was when the cameraman pressed record. And at the right time, Bruce's teachings and writings beyond his films would come back to me at the core of my personal transformation. And they would lay the cornerstone of really who and what I am today. And I was really shocked looking back on his collective works, preparing for this episode, because of how much of the concepts and just the labels to different ideas that he had have really been deeply ingrained in me that I kind of like forgot, or not even forgot, but they melted together with everything else, right? So it's kind of surprising to go back into an earlier stage of your journey and look at this one particular source of light and truth and of thought and be kind of taken aback by just how much it gave me and how much hope it gave me, how much strength I would develop through his words and his process in my earlier days of personal development. So that right time where I'm saying that there's this cornerstone that was laid was July of 2016, the beginning of Bruce Lee Podcast, which is hosted by his daughter, Shannon Lee. This would serendipitously arrive within a couple of months of the beginning of my meditation practice. It was probably 5 or 6 months after I had graduated my yoga teacher training and I'd been introduced to meditation but hadn't done it consistently. And I went back and learned transcendental meditation, which I practice regularly as one of the core facets of my rituals to this day, or at least my daily rituals, I should say. And it's just interesting to see the coming together of influences at that time. It was also as I was searching for the avenue through which I would offer my services to the collective, how I would help people. I knew that I was going to become some sort of doctor at that point in time, but I didn't know what kind of doctor. It turns out that I wouldn't know until many, many years later that it would be Doctor of Divinity or bust, at least for now. But yeah, I was on the path to like a postgraduate education or graduate education, whatever. and I began listening to this show, and it was really revolutionary. I listened for the first 2 years to, like, I think the first 130-something episodes was straight through, and nowadays they do shorter seasons, so they branched out a little bit. I used to take notes. I journaled on what was discussed. I would re-listen to certain episodes over and over again in order to discern more value from them. And the podcast itself has a really goofy and fun-loving sort of feel-good atmosphere. It's always easy to listen to. And sometimes it featured a guest every now and then to reminisce about Bruce's life, his relationships, his impacts on people, of course. But most of the time, it dove into his actual lifestyle and his teachings and his ways of thought. And lots of material was sourced from unpublished writings from his personal works. He had an extremely extensive library of many thousands of books, most of which were heavily marked and annotated. And then he also had tons and tons of journals and notes and all kinds of stuff like that. And a lot of it he wrote for himself as part of his own process. But Shannon, as a direct family member, had access to this incredible archive that she began to share with the world. And let me tell you, if you haven't taken a dive into his philosophy or his writings beyond Instagram quotes, like, you are really in for a treat if you decide to take a deeper dive down the rabbit hole here. Because after I go into the rounding up of, like, my story with Bruce, what we're going to be doing today is kind of like an overview of some of the most influential things to me from Bruce Lee podcast, because it's the most kind of succinct and well organized and titled outlets for information on his philosophy. And then next week's show, we're going to dive into more principles that I held as some of, like, the most important things that I took away from my years of listenership. But it's nothing compared to actually sitting down with Shannon and her guests and her co-host, or just picking up one of Bruce's books, or watching one of his movies, or watching one of the many documentaries that are out now on his life. Like, even up to, I think 2018 was the last major documentary that that was made about him and his influence. I think it's called Be Water, and it's on ESPN+. It doesn't compare. So this is more like a love letter to his influence in my life. We're going to get into really valuable, actionable. I'm even going to ask you, if you do something with this, please share it with me. I want to hear what happens. I want to hear whether or not you've had a relationship to it before. I want to hear whether or not you take today's show and get into it and actually make affirmations of your own, because we're going to be talking about his affirmations today. And not to say that that's not valuable, but to get it closer from the source itself is really, really powerful, because they go deeper than I will with the amount of time we have allotted to this. So you'll see it. You'll see it in the rest of my work. Earlier on in Forge Your Health podcast, you'll find his influences, even a lot of quotes from him. Several years after what would be my deep dive into his life through the work of Shannon Lee, it was still all really prominent. And so if you go back and listen to our earlier episodes, I apologize for how horrible my intros were back then, but the content after the intro is pretty solid. If you want to fast forward, it will be there, and it is powerful stuff. I bring this to you now, really above all else, once again, because for one, we are quickly approaching the 49th anniversary of his passing at the time of this recording. And just a couple weeks ago, I turned 32 myself, and no other birthday has loomed over me for so long. You know, this has been a period of really deep reflection for me, coupled with aggressive bouts of action. And perhaps, if I'm honest, because I always am, you know me, it's been fueled by a longing and consideration for the way I wish things were and the way that I fight so hard for them to be. And it's a good time for me to ask myself, do I really fight for them enough? Have I fought for them consistently enough? Have I checked myself regularly enough? And this is a core facet of personal development, is really checking in as often as possible, and you have to schedule it if you can't do it intuitively on a regular basis. You know, asking what you've been up to and what you have only been dreaming about while letting progress be a memory versus what you've actually been striving for and what actions you've taken as opposed to just thought. And these last few weeks, progress has absolutely, for me, been as real as it comes. It's in part thanks to this milestone in my life that has been such a big moment for me, thanks to Bruce. And I believe Bruce to be one of the most introspective people who's ever lived, considering how much he achieved for himself at a very young age. It's really amazing. I don't remember specifics, but in some episodes, they're reading passages from him from in his teens and early 20s, and he's still there, man. I mean, obviously, there's more lessons to be learned and more development up until the day of his death, but my goodness, he never forgot to check in with himself. He never put it aside that he was striving to be the best version of him that he could find within, through his trials, through his suffering that is self-imposed. It is self-imposed for us to try to be something more than what we are right now, right? And so, without going on anymore, today I'd like to recap one of the most impactful concepts I've learned from him that really deserves to have a spotlight all to itself this week, and that's going to be the affirmations that he wrote to himself and kept on little index cards and carried with him in his wallet at all times to take out and read when he needed them. As a quick glimpse into the future, the other concepts that we're going to get into next episode are the art of dying, broken rhythm, conquering yourself, the six diseases, and a lot of stuff about the complete human and the concept of true mastery and the concept of someone real trying to be that authentic self. And the concept of the impasse and the ego boundary, and just through his words and mind, this evolutionary flow of a lot of what is compartmentalized and broken down and isolated today in the personal development and self-optimization space, because we're excellent at that, right? We're excellent at breaking things apart and then reorganizing them the way we see fit. We're not really all that intuitively inclined unless we really, really challenge ourselves intentionally to bring things back together into an interconnecting system. And I believe that if you read enough of Bruce's writings, he achieved that. And we're going to see that today in the affirmations, but just as a little sneak peek of what we're getting into. Aside from it, since learning about these, I've made several sets of my own. It really got me through some very hard times. I would write my first sets of affirmations shortly before chiropractic school. I believe it was the summer before chiropractic school that I sat down on my Evernote app, which I was fond of at the time, and wrote out affirmations that I would then have that window open in class during my crazy however many hour work weeks before I would not be able to attend anymore, and just like read them all the time during lectures. And since then, I've helped a lot of people make their own. And in all of my training as a life coach, as a healing arts facilitator, etc., whatever label you want to pick for my roster, I've never come across any system, simple or complex, that for me feels as right and true as simply freely writing a series of titles and explanations from the heart that align with what you need most right now, just like Bruce seemingly did with his. And I've had tons and tons of experiences where you organize and reorganize your inner knowing and your thoughts in every which way you could possibly imagine. But when I teach people affirmations of their own, to this day, it's still rooted in Bruce's practice because I feel like that is the most potent. If you need more structure, sure, here's some structure. I got plenty of it for you. But I love how he just allowed it to come out of him onto the page. And so the titles of his affirmations are memory, subconscious mind, imagination, emotions, reason, conscience, and willpower. Seven in all. This is a fantastic series. I believe this is episodes 15 through 17 of the podcast, way back from the early days of their show. And I'll link to those in the show notes eventually as I flesh out this blog page for sure, if it's not there right away. But you could also just Google Bruce Lee affirmations and it'll come right up. We're going to dig a little bit into each of these, not extensively, but just to give you guys an idea of why he did this and how it builds into a system that really locks you in to expressing yourself from a very high place, if not all of the time, most of the time, so long as you stay connected to what is written. So for memory, it was working to recall thoughts related to subjects that would instill an alert memory, recognizing the value of an alert mind. And this is paraphrasing here. Some of them I'm going to share the whole thing. Some of them are just going to flow with it. He also says that memory is not for accumulation, but synthesis and application. So it's not for holding on to, it's for integration into your personal flow. And the first time that I came in contact with this, I was actually really blown away because if you are a type A person or you have a type A background at some point in your journey, it's very, very important to you. Or even if you're a student, I hope a lot of students listen. If you know college students or graduate students in your life that don't listen to the show, share it with them, please, because I really hope to connect with that audience. Believe that they, among other groups of people, really need this type of content. But anyways, as a student, you're taught to cram, right? You need more information. You need it in order to get past the next obstacle, fill out those multiple choice bubbles, and get through the thing. And then for your desk job even, you have to memorize these processes. And it's all about you're growing in your career. A lot of the time is about hoarding information and then like throwing it up and letting it die, right? And never actually integrating it. But like for me, what it's become is like if I have the essence of having learned really in-depth like advanced human metabolism and biochemistry and physiology, I don't have to remember what the stages are for like polarization and depolarization, for when it goes in your like eye cells for light and dark in a room. Like I don't need to remember what each of the bony points are called on like my femur bone, right? I need to know that I have studied the human body so intimately that when I am coaching somebody, they are safe and they are hopeful that they will improve. And I need to be confident that I have studied the human body intimately enough that when I lay my hands on somebody, I can visualize exactly what my hands are being laid over. Does that mean that I need to know the name of every single nerve and branch of nerve running through the system to this day? I don't believe anybody does, but there's a difference between holding on to it like, oh, I can't remember that I don't, it's just, I can't even, it's so frustrating I don't remember what this one's called. Or I know that there are nerves here, that these nerves are connected to this organ, that this organ and these nerves are connected to the spine, that the spine is connected to the brain, and I know my areas of rapport, and I know my method of contact can relieve the tension and change the tone of this person's system, or rather allow their system to change its own tone through the impulse that I deliver, through gentle touch or allowing them to breathe, doing Reiki, whatever. I am confident that regardless of the name of this nerve, that I can help this person. And that can be, that's my example, because that's easy for me to spit out. Your example can be any of the, it can be anything under the sun. You're an accountant. Don't fret over not like remembering. I know that real estate people need like continuing education credits. Don't freaking fret over whether or not you can remember what was taught in the 2-hour workshop thingabubber that you did 3 years ago for that year's. It's not about that. It's about the confidence in your truth that comes from having learned it at a point in time. And you know what? We have the internet and we have textbooks. We can go, if we really need to, and investigate and relight up those signals and grease the grooves of those neural pathways and remember when absolutely necessary. If you tried to hold on to everything, you'd probably die. You'd like suffocate under the weight of your own brain. So that's memory. Not accumulation, but synthesis and application. I love that. Subconscious mind. So in subconscious mind, he says, I shall take care to submit to a clear and definite picture of my major purpose in life and all minor purposes leading to my major purpose, keeping this picture constantly before my subconscious mind by repeating it daily. This is paraphrasing again. This isn't the whole one for this one. This is about usurping the influence of the subconscious over the power of the will by inputting a true north, a reason and a purpose, to create rhythm and flow within it. So instead of letting your subconscious mind run random, inputting the image and the feeling of your major purpose and all of the minor things that lead to it, in order to have your subconscious mind running in the same direction as you would see fit. And this is just all my interpretations of them, right? So these like comments are completely different. I haven't listened to it in a long time. I deliberately did not re-listen to these episodes of Shannon Lee's podcast in doing this because I wanted it to be mine and my influence. Like I even have my original set of affirmations was 7 and it ends in willpower just like Bruce's, and my willpower is not his willpower. I wanted it to come from me and encourage you to go listen to hers because she has had a lot more time to sit with it than I have in delivering it to me several years ago the way that she did, as well as delivering it to many other people. So that's subconscious mind. Thirdly is imagination. And this is a quote. Recognizing the need for sound plans and ideas for the attainment of my desires, I will develop my imagination by calling upon it daily for help in the formation of my plans. And then here's a separate quote on the same line of thought. Creative intuition opens the wellsprings within man, activates the inner light, and is free and limitless. So this is really fascinating to me because we often separate creativity from planning and goal achievement. So this is another of what I just commented on, that we're excellent in the high achiever world of compartmentalizing and having all your ducks in a row, but we're very bad at integrating it all together unless we really strive to do so, where you stop being so rigid and start living in flow and things happen without them having to be in A, B, C, D order. This is almost like it's left out after the creation of an idea comes to pass in most cases. And by including imagination here in planning and goal achievement, Bruce is really breaking the barrier by integrating the imaginative process into the entire process of desire attainment from start to finish. And I thought that was really cool. The next one is emotions. This is, I believe, the full quote. In any case, realizing that my emotions are both positive and negative, I will form daily habits which will encourage the development of the positive emotions and aid me in converting the negative emotions into some form of useful action. So here there's two things. There's the utilization of self-awareness to take negative emotional content and use them as building blocks for useful outcomes. That's what really grabs me here. And then also an acknowledgement that they can't be eliminated, but can be made useful if interpreted as teachers through which lessons come. So it's really fascinating to me. I'm not trying to put words in his mouth about saying like, oh, negative emotions can never be eliminated, but it takes a lot, whether or not he believed that they could be at some point in time. Obviously, they lessen over time as you do the work, right? I'm sure he knew that. But it's a tremendous amount of work in order to lessen that load. And so using them before they can be fully integrated is a powerful tool to have, because negative emotions, for me, at least they come up every day, you know? And so recognizing them and then turning them toward a form of useful action, that's pretty profound. And you'll see them start to flow together here as we get into the last few. After emotions comes reason. Recognizing that my positive and negative emotions may be dangerous if they are not guided to desirable ends, I will submit all my desires, aims, and purposes to my faculty of reason, and I will be guided by it in giving expression to these. So this is the almost interplay between divine feminine and divine masculine, right? The emotional body versus the analytical body, the right brain versus the left brain. And it is acknowledging that when we go on emotion alone, whether they positive or negative, it can be really off the beaten path of what we want our desires, aims, and purposes to be. And so the emotional decisions that he is making needs to be going up against the committee of his faculty of reason and guided by it before being given its own expression. So the logical mind aligned with desired outcome as highest self, superseding consequential action in response to emotion, like this idea that the two working together, because the logical mind, the reason mind on its own would have us never moving towards our greatest selves. It just wouldn't. It would be like the buts and what ifs, right? Like it would be the safety factor. It would be holding back in order to maintain status quo. That's not what we're here for. And then the emotions need guidance through what would bring the best outcome. So that's what we use reason for. And once again, just my interpretation. The next one is conscience. And here we have both emotions and reason mentioned. Recognizing that my emotions often err in their over-enthusiasm, and my faculty of reason often is without the warmth of feeling that is necessary to enable me to combine justice with mercy in my judgments, I will encourage my conscience to guide me as to what is right and wrong, but I will never set aside the verdict it renders, no matter what may be the cost of carrying them out. So this is full-on intuition. This is about the ego being without warmth, without heart, without that feeling that is necessary to enable me to combine justice with mercy, and the emotions being over-enthusiastic. So that's going from the heart, which is separate from the intuition. He's saying, I will encourage my conscience to guide me as to what is right and wrong, and I will never put aside the verdict it renders, no matter what may be the cost of carrying them all out. So this is literally, like, shout out to Justin Fairman and Jackie Knechtel, the people who introduced me to follow my intuition at all times, above all costs. This is a single, maybe run-on sentence, quote, whatever. I like run-ons just as much as Bruce does, obviously. This is about following your intuition and being connected to it as a superseding and domineering force that ties emotion and reason together, which is super cool and powerful. Anyways, now we get into the granddaddy of all affirmations, willpower. And I've found in recent years that many people interpret the term willpower in many different ways. I go by a similar thought process as Bruce does. I don't see willpower as fleeting or as something that we rely on in individual circumstances where we are only at our best. I see willpower as a reservoir that I feed through action. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. But anyways, willpower. Recognizing that the power of will is the supreme court over all other departments of my mind, I will exercise it daily when I need the urge to act for any purpose, and I will form habits designed to bring the power of my will into action at least once daily. So here's some more. I took more from the willpower episode than I did from all of the other ones because it has a lot of wonderful quotations from him on the blog, and so that'll be linked to in the show notes. But it says that, quote, a self-willed man has no other aim than his own growth. He values only one thing, the mysterious power within himself, which bids him live and helps him grow. His only living destiny is the silent, ungainsayable law in his own heart, which comfortable habits make it so hard to obey, but which to the self-willed man is destiny and Godhead. So, whew, the first quote was the actual willpower affirmation. This was an add-on from elsewhere in Bruce Lee's writings that was on their blog. And this means to me that a self-willed man obeys a law beyond that of conceding to discomfort, that his response to discomfort is to rely on his will to supersede any such result. So to arrive at points between and beyond temporary suffering or discomfort that would keep us from our internal destiny, we respond to all discomfort by an action fueled by will. The power of will fuels all action which would align with your personal truth. And the power of will, or the reservoir of willpower, now I'm speaking really from my own writings on will, kind of mixing things together here, it's fueled by action toward that truth, coupled with non-attachment to the outcome of any such action. So the response to all outcomes in a self-willed man with a reservoir of willpower to call upon is to continue. The outcome is comfortable, continue. The outcome is uncomfortable, continue. And that is Bruce Lee's seven affirmations. I had a lot of fun doing this. I really did. I really want to make sure that you know that if you enjoyed today's episode and you plan on writing your own series of affirmations, that I really want to see them. Like, I want you to share them with me and, you know, join the conversation and let me get to see what you've gotten out of this and what you come up with on your own. If not, as Shannon invites all her listeners to, go over to the Bruce Lee Podcast's webpage from brucelee.com, and you can write down his affirmations and keep them around with you and reread his in order to help you before you maybe have the inclination to write some yourself. And once again, if you enjoyed today's episode, please let me know by submitting a review or dropping me a DM. Show some love, so show some support. Share this with a friend, anybody who you feel would need it or enjoy it. On iTunes, you can do the 5-star thing and also leave a review. It can be 1 or 2 sentences. That helps grow the show a lot. And on Spotify, you can still rate the show and make sure you're following, make sure you're subscribed. That's really critical to allowing our audience to bloom. And once again, I'd love to see them. Let me know if you get to writing your own affirmations. And if you have already, then allow me to join in enjoying the fruits of your own self-exploration. I think it'd be fun to have conversations off of this. So yeah, let me know what you got going on. And until next time, where we're getting into some really, really good stuff as well. Once again, The Art of Dying, Broken Rhythm, Conquering Yourself, The 6 Diseases, Being Someone Real, The Impasse, Ego Boundary, True Mastery, Complete Human. It's going to be really cool. So thanks for listening. Again, I appreciate you. Do not forget that you are loved. Do not forget that you are never alone. Do not forget that I'm here for you. If you need a reminder ever, please do not hesitate to reach out. And until next episode, Hare Krishna.